This is FNX.
Listen to Shoot the Defense. It's unbelievable, Jeff.
Hello, welcome to Shoot the Defense on FNX. I'm your host, Stel, and my co-host this evening, as ever, is Mr. Yanakis J. Say hello, Yan.
Hello.
Oh, you sound so much better now.
Yeah, I'm alright. I got your bloody man cold from last week, so...
I haven't physically seen you in about 2 months. How can you blame me for your man flu?
Then I got to blame someone, and I just thought you're the ideal candidate, to be fair.
Dickhead. Yeah, blimey. But yeah, how you been otherwise? Good?
I'm good, mate. Yeah, United are flying. City are top. Liverpool are not there anymore. So yeah, I'm good.
Blimey. That's how the show's going to be. Right. My other co-host is fashionably late as ever. Holly Rod, as I like to call him nowadays. So, you know, he can't steal all the limelight, for fuck's sake. So, you know, we've had a long... awaited returning guest tonight. It's none other than host of the eSpurs podcast, Dan Tracy. Dan, welcome back, mate. How you doing?
Thanks for the very kind introduction. I'm very well, thank you.
Good, good, good. Dan, before we start the show, mate, tell our listeners what you do, what you've been involved in. I heard you on the Bros Talking Soccer podcast the other day, but for those who haven't listened to the show, let our listeners know. In fact, remind them what you do.
Okay, so I'm a freelance football writer, podcaster, statistician, just about everything. Got things in quite a few pies that keeps you busy, but ultimately the sort of main vein of sort of work at the moment is podcasting. So like you just said, I do the eSpurs podcast once a week, and also I've got my own sort of new project, which is the Real Football Cast, which is like an overview of anything that's happened in the last 7 days. Pretty much similar to this, but you know, always worth a listen. And apart from that, the odd sort of betting, writing articles, stuff like that. So if you check me out on Twitter, at DanTracy1983, there's always a constant stream of the work that I'm doing, and feel free to check any of it out.
Superb. Now, can you remind me what it's like to do a podcast when you're following a team that's doing well? Because as a United fan, it's been about 6 years. So I can't remember, really.
Yeah, it's good, actually. I mean, we've not had a defeat in a while, touch wood. So, but conversely, I think... the better episodes when we lose, because it's almost a bit of cathartic nature and everyone wants to get you know, they're moaning off their chest. You know, it's good to talk about football, but it's better to moan about it as well. So certainly it would be less fun if we were sort of 9th and 10th and losing every week, but yeah, it's a, you know, it's good fun. But even when we're third in the league, life isn't perfect. You know, there's always a whinge about not signing players and the stadium not being built, so there's enough to keep us busy.
Great stuff. Superb.
Still, we've been moaning for the last 6 years, isn't it?
I'd say that, yeah. We started the show 2012. Who won the league in 2012, 2013? Was it United? Did we win it? I can't even remember. It was us, wasn't it? Yeah, we won it in 2012, 2013, and then the year after that was David Moyes, and everything's been a blur since. Yeah, strange blur at that, but anyway. Right, let's start our show one place. It's the Etihad again, because we started the show last week at the Etihad when City beat Arsenal. But this time, Sergio Aguero equaled Alan Shearer on 11 Premier League hat-tricks in Sete's 6-0 demolition of Chelsea. Raheem Sterling and Ilkay Gundogan also got in on the act on an afternoon when Maurizio Sarri admitted his future at the club is uncertain. Dan, Chelsea did well in the opening 3 minutes of the game, but totally capitulated when Raheem Sterling gave City the lead. Sarri said City pressed better and played with more intensity, although I'm sure you'll agree that there was much more to it than that. City were unmerciful.
Well, yeah, they were just ruthless, weren't they? I mean, on any given day, City are always going to be a difficult team to go up against, and I think if any sign of weakness and they pounce on it, you know, you look at when they mercifully killed Burton and Rotherham. I know we're sort of talking about lower league opposition, but Chelsea looked like lower league opposition today. You talk about 3 minutes of a good Chelsea performance, but you can't really take that in isolation. It was just an awful day, really. It's almost those 3 minutes woke City up, and they thought, actually, you know, we've got a game in our hands. A lot of people going into that game thought, oh, do you know what? That could be a game where Chelsea, where City dropped points. But yeah, I mean, once City thought, you know, right, no mucking about today, they were absolutely ruthless.
Yan knows all about a good 3-minute display, don't you, Yan? sorry, I had to get that one in. I'm going to ask you both this question because, number one, Rod isn't here, and B, I want to hear your views on this one, Dan. Last week, we really ran out of superlatives to describe Aguero. Is it now safe to say he's the best striker in Premier League history?
History? Wow, that's a bold statement. I mean, it depends how you define that, because if you look at goals alone, then you have to look at Alan Shearer, don't you? 260 goals, but then he played in the Premier League for forever, so it's probably not the most fairest comparison. But then, if you're looking at actual accolades, you know, and you'd have to probably point closer in the direction of Aguero. So history is a bit of a bold statement. I mean, at the same time, you argue he's the best striker now when you've got Harry Kane. So I was looking earlier, the numbers, the sort of goals to game ratio, and they're both now on 0.70 goals to game. So they're exactly the same. So, you know, which one is the best? I mean, that's a tough call. Maybe I'm biased because I'm a Tottenham fan. But in history, probably yes, just because he's won more. I don't think you can necessarily just look at goals themselves. I think for what Aguero's done, and you know, he's 100 goals short now of Alan Shearer. So if he did stay that Man City till he's what, 34, then there's no real reason why he couldn't then take that accolade for himself.
Absolutely. And Jan?
It's a difficult one still because he was, you know, both strikers in different eras. I mean, if you want to talk about Shearer, you know, Southampton, Blackburn, Newcastle, to get the amount of goals that he did for them three clubs, and let's face it, they're not the biggest clubs in the Premiership, you know, speaks volumes for how good Shearer was. But, you know, like Dan said, if you want to talk about, you know, a player who's won trophies and, you know, who hasn't been in the Premiership all this time, who's a foreigner, who's embedded himself well in the Premiership, then, you know, Aguero, Henri, Van Nistelrooy as such, they've all been phenomenal strikers. So Aguero certainly up there, but then again, he's got a lot of, you know, he's got the players as well that supply him with the goals as well. So you've got to look at, you know, the team that he's playing for as well, full of world-class players.
Great stuff. Now, that little noise you heard is the returning Rodri Giggs. Hello, Holly Rod, how you doing? Look, he's still laughing. Laughing all the way to the bank, yeah?
Yeah, it's been a good weekend.
Yeah, it has been. It has been. Well, for those of you listening, you know, you're obviously listening for Rodri, and I'd just like to congratulate you on your new job as a Paddy Power Rewards Club Ambassador. You know, the disloyal Rodri Giggs.
Yeah, cheers.
Rod, I need to ask you something, man, because I've got a million questions to ask, but there's one in particular. Are you sure you don't have Greek blood? I mean, what's with the chest hair, man? You're putting me and Jan to shame.
Well, if you actually, I'm going to give you an exclusive here.
Go on.
That is actually my body double in the advert.
You have a body double as well? Get the fuck out of here. I'm not having that.
No, serious. There's a certain kind of stuff. If you look, my hands are brown. His hands are white. I think that's the giveaway.
Nah, come on. Wow. Right, come on, spill. What? How did this all come about, man?
It was at the start of, just before Christmas. I'm friends with Will Mellor, and he deals with an agent that I've dealt with before, and Paddy Power got in contact with her, asking would it be interested in doing an advert. And it just snowballed from there, really.
That's crazy. And how long did it take to film everything?
We did everything on, started on the 21st, filmed Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and then photo shoot Thursday, and that was it. I've just done my last social media on Friday in Dublin.
Bloody hell. Because you've done the audio as well, because it's on TalkSport. So did you get the studio for that as well?
I did that last week, last Friday or last Thursday in London.
Crikey, that's amazing, man. That's amazing. And like when you read the script, you must have been like, this is me, Dan Tati, right?
it was some of it was, it changed about 20 times. So first of all, they put the first one down, and they said what you're not happy with, and they basically were slagging off Wales. I suppose that's not going to happen. So basically everything else, I said yeah, whatever, but it kept on changing. So yeah, and then we got to the final bit.
Because there's a lot of things in that people kind of noticed. I saw all the tweets on the Paddy Power feed, and like they noticed the poster, the wandering cock, and they noticed.
Yeah, well, the poster that wasn't originally supposed to be on there. It was as I'm walking in the pub, it was a number 11, and she switched it round to a vase.
Oh, okay.
That's okay. The way it was going to work. As I'm walking in, my mates give her the nod, and she quickly turned it round because it had number 11 on the shirt,
okay.
on the thing, but she couldn't do it, and it kept it. It fucking took ages to do.
And what about drinking?
They obviously cut it.
What about drinking from a City mug, man? Come on, that must have been.
Well, that was my old Cardiff City mug. It just faded.
All right. Superb, brilliant. So, what exactly are you going to be doing, man?
No, that's it. That's it.
So you're not going to be turning up to these Paddy Power events and shaking hands and all that kind of stuff?
Possibly, yeah. Possibly doing a bit of that for him, yeah. And do some columns and stuff. So yeah.
And no Coronation Street, no.
No, I see that today. It was just. But this the sun just made me laugh. Just talk about.
Oh, mate, because Mike's brother Rick sent me a WhatsApp image of the I think it was the Daily Star, and it had you and like all these other like potential, you know, roles that you're going to be in the Coronation Street. I was like, I've got to message him. I've got to see what this is all about.
someone tweeted before that I'm going to be the next James Bond, so just the first thing.
Superb, man, brilliant. No, good luck with that, mate. It's brilliant. Like when I saw that, you know, you sent me the link to the advert, and I was wetting myself. And obviously, when I said, you know, can I tweet it out and tell the boys I want to, yeah, go ahead with it. And I told everyone, and everyone I know has been like, that's fantastic. Even my mum, she was like, bloody hell, like that's immense. I was like, yep. My mum as well.
It was enjoyable. It was fun. It was fun watching and seeing people work, and because it was. It was a big crew, and it was a big, like, just like organised chaos, but proper professional, and yeah, it was good. It was really enjoyable to do.
Great stuff. Well, mate, you know, you deserve it. You deserve it, man, and yeah, good luck with that. It's immense. Cheers, absolutely immense. Sorry, Dan. Just had to do that because you know, I haven't spoken to Rodri properly about this, but yeah, Rod, Dan is back on the show. Dan's a big Spurs fan, and he's very happy at the moment, as you can understand.
Yeah, Dan, you okay?
Yeah, not too bad, thanks.
Good. Rod, we were just talking about Aguero. You know, we spoke about him last week. We were saying how good he is. Do you think he's the best striker in Premier League history?
How much it pains me to say, but I still think he's still a little bit behind Shearer. But you know, if he keeps on going the way he's going, then there'll be no argument. He will become that best Premier League striker, I think. But I still think Alan Shearer's, you know, even though it pains me to say it, I still think he's still got a little bit to go.
He deep down regrets not joining United, doesn't he? I don't care what anyone says.
Oh, 100%. Well, you never know, because these strikers are a weird bunch. All they're worried about is the goal stats and the personal things. You never know, but you know, most people get in the game to win trophies, and he would have got an app for, wouldn't he?
Mm, absolutely. Right, Jan, I was really impressed with Zinchenko's performance, mate. I actually believe he can make that left-back spot his own, especially given the icy relationship between Guardiola and Mendy. What do you reckon?
Yeah, he had a good game today. He never gave kind of Pedro an inch over there on that side. And, you know, going forward, he's always a threat. He's got good pace. I just think he needs a bit of consistency with, you know, a bit of run of games in the team. And then he's only going to get better with the players that he's got around him. But, you know, it was a credit to him for Guardiola to put him in such a big game. The fact that he hasn't featured a lot this season probably speaks volumes of the player. So, yeah, you know, as you said, Mendy and Guardiola seem to have this kind of love-hate relationship. So if Zinchenko stays into the stays in the team and carries on performing like he did today, then, yeah, I agree. He'll make that left-back spot his own.
Mm. Did you see that pre-match press conference with Guardiola where he's wearing that rainbow shirt? That sweatshirt.
No.
Yes, I saw that, yeah. It's a bit of a weird jumper choice, isn't it?
Yeah, and they mentioned Mendy, and they were saying that Mendy was in Barcelona, then he went to, I think, somewhere in the Far East, and Guardiola was like, you sure? He was in Barcelona or something like that? He goes, yeah. He goes, fucking hell, I didn't even know where he is. So if Guardiola doesn't even know where his own player is, that tells me that there's something going on between the two. Dan, another away defeat for Chelsea and another match without a goal. Sarri told Italian media at full time, if the president calls, I'll be happy, seeing as I never hear from him. To be honest, I don't know what to expect. I think we all know what to expect. You're out the door soon, won't he?
Well, I think the only saving grace he's got is the Europa League. If he wins that and gets Chelsea back in the Champions League, then I think he'll keep his job. But, you know, that result on Sunday, or today, sorry, I mean, that is going to be the stick to beat them with. And if they do finish outside the top four, then they'll look back at that, regardless of what else they do in the final third of the season, and he's off. Because you can't lose to City 6-0 away from home. Haven B, I remember, got sacked after Liverpool defeat when we were at home to them. It was like 5-2, something stupid like that, and he was off. So those kind of results, once you're sort of done and dusted and you're not competing for, you know, the top four prize or something, I don't think we'll become sacked before the end of the season. But I think, yeah, like I say, if they don't win the Europa League and get into the top four, then they're absolutely done.
But they've done it before, Dan. They got rid of Scolari when he was midway through his Chelsea tenure. In fact, he was midway through the year, wasn't he? He wasn't even there a full year. So it wouldn't surprise me if they give Sarri the boot, especially in the position that they're in. I mean, I know they've got the Europa League and there's that possibility to qualify for the Champions League that way. But when you look at the teams that are remaining, especially Arsenal, given their form, I think it's very, very tricky. And as I said on last week's show, in fact, the week before, they haven't really backed him in the transfer market. So I don't know whether it's because of financial fair play or because they haven't got that revenue coming in from the Champions League, which will then enable them to spend or even break even or whatnot. But it just seems to me that they don't trust him.
I guess there's an element of that. I think it's probably more financial constraints, and, you know, there's no real lavish spending at Chelsea anymore. I think, you know, what could Chelsea really buy in January that was going to make their squad better? Obviously, they got a striker that they needed. But apart from that, you know, there's no real tangible target where they could actually go out and spend an extra sort of 40 million. I just don't think that kind of player is available. And I think that's been the case for many top six clubs. I know Arsenal did a business with Denis Suarez, but there's not really a great calibre of player at this time of the year. So I don't think it's necessarily not backing him. I just don't really think there are the targets. But at the same time, you know, I just don't think Chelsea, that big spending era, I don't think we'll ever really see again.
And Jan, after the 4-0 loss at Bournemouth, we all agreed that perhaps it would be better for Chelsea and Hazard that the player leaves. Again, their main man was anonymous today. History shows that when Hazard's form dips, it means the manager is a dead man walking. Make no mistake about it, mate, the Belgian isn't the main problem at the club. A major overhaul is needed, wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, Hazard's a Real Madrid player, mate. He's going in the summer for me.
Yeah.
There's a lot of players at Chelsea that, you know, have underperformed a lot this season. I mean, they had an incredible start to the season, but the form has dipped incredibly now. Is it down to the manager? Is it down to the players? But we've seen the Chelsea players down to the manager, you know, the managers over the years. So it doesn't surprise me at that club. The only thing Sarri's got to laugh about, if he signed a 4-year deal, he's going to get paid really well when he gets sacked.
And they've down to also managers that have actually won things as well. Big trophies, big boy exactly. Trophies. So there you go.
Can we see Mourinho back at Chelsea for a third time?
Oof. Yeah. Oof. Blimey. I don't know how many noses that'll put out of joint, to be fair. There you are. Right. Don't say it too loud, but Spurs are still in with a shout for the title. Their hard-fought and somewhat fortuitous victory over Leicester leaves them just 5 points behind the leaders. Dan, it was by no means a pretty win, but it's job done again. Was the turning point via these penalty miss?
I don't know about that necessarily. I think it certainly woke us up because obviously minutes later we went and got a second. It was still in the balance. I know sort of Harvey Barnes had a chance in both halves that should have really scored one, if not two of them. So I don't necessarily know about a turning point, but I think it was certainly the spark which made sure we got over the line. But at the same time, after going to three at the back, we sat back far too deep and then Leicester got back in the game. So in seasons gone by, that would quite easily been a 2-2 or, you know, a Tottenham collapse, and everyone would have been sort of laughing on social media. But we've sort of found this grit and determination, especially over the past four league matches, and, you know, 12 from 12 without Kane, and things aren't as bad as first seemed.
And Rod, what do you make of that Vardy penalty miss? Because I know a lot of people on social media were saying, oh, he shouldn't have taken it because that was his first touch, blah, blah, blah. But he's a quality striker, you know, and it's a penalty.
Yeah, for me, all that bit's rubbish. It's his first touch. Professional footballer, he took a 1,000 penalties. So, and he's the penalty taker. So, yeah, if he comes on and he's confident he wants to take it, yeah, I have no problem with that at all. You know, sometimes you win and you lose. Sometimes you win, sometimes you lose. You know, if he didn't take it and Maddison missed, then he'd be saying, well, why didn't take it? He's a penalty taker, he's a bottler. So, no, I have no problem with him taking it. You know, in hindsight, yeah, probably Maddison should have took it. But, no, if he's the penalty taker and he just comes on, he's the penalty taker. You know, like if back if the club captain comes on, the captain gives the club captain the armband, it's just the same thing. You know, it's the designated penalty taker, that's who it is, and that's why he took it.
There we go. And no one was fighting for the ball, so that's a good thing. Mr. Benteke or Mitrovic or Kamara.
Yeah, well, it seems like that he's clearly the penalty taker, and that all the players know that. He doesn't miss a lot. It was just unfortunate that he did miss, and it was his first touch.
All right, Rod, tell me about Pochettino and Spurs, because it's really difficult to criticise them at the moment, you know, but they've got Chelsea, Liverpool and City away and Arsenal to come at home. Do you think they'll still be in the hunt for the title in April, May?
No, but then again, I didn't think they'd be 5 points off at this point about 2 or 3 weeks ago. So, you know, they're saying that they're missing all these players, but they just keep on getting the results and keep on playing well. You know, they got beat off United, but let's not kid ourselves. They absolutely battered us. So, yes, they're going the right way, and they've got teams in up above them that could affect the lead. So, you know, it's kind of in their own hands, but I still think that they're just too far off for them to go the whole season and not get beat. I just can't see that. I still think they'll get beat once or twice. You know, they're obviously not drawn any games, so I still think there's a couple more banana skins, and you know, with them being 5 points or possibly more, it's just, yeah, I think it's too much. But you know, he's doing a fantastic job, and you know, if Harry Kane comes back and Dele Alli come back, who knows, but looking at City today, you know, they're looking strong, and Liverpool, yes, the grind that was up, but City look like they turned the corner now and they've upped it a level, so it's going to be exciting for the rest of the season.
I agree. Yeah, now, to be fair, Leicester were unlucky to leave Wembley empty-handed. It just goes to show that when you're shit out of luck, things can go horribly wrong.
Yeah, I agree, mate. I mean, Leicester had edge chances today. There weren't, like, even half chances. I mean, Barnes, I mean, especially his second one. You know, I think that's criminal kind of finishing, to be honest. He's got the whole goal to aim at, and he just hits Lloris. I mean, you've got to give the goalkeeper credit for saving it from there anyway, but for me, it's dreadful finishing. Obviously, missing the penalty. I thought they were in the game a lot today. And, you know, while Tottenham were there for the taking today, you need to take the chances. And they didn't. And to be fair, Tottenham didn't even create a lot of chances. So they scored 3 goals today from what? 5 attempts? 6 attempts? So even Leicester at the back today was shocking. So, but yeah, like you said, on another day, if they take the chances earlier on, it's a different game, or even later on in the game. So they deserved at least, you know, at least a point or something out of the game. But, you know, football's a cruel game. You've got to take your chances.
Yeah, and that's 2 consecutive losses against big clubs for Leicester. And one of them, who they lost to last week, United, they weathered an early Fulham storm to come away with a 3-0 victory at Craven Cottage. 2 Paul Pogba goals with a Martial solo effort sandwiched in between moves United into the top four for, I was going to say, a little over 24 hours, but City won today, so there goes my Saturday night writing, isn't it? Dan, as a fan of a club that has had an incredible change in form over the last few years, has Solskjaer's tenure so far impressed you much?
Absolutely. I mean, he couldn't do much better bar that draw against Burnley. It's been absolutely perfect, hasn't it? Just the way he's transformed the club, there seems to be an air of confidence and people want to play for him. And it's just, it's almost like, well, it is night and day, really, isn't it, if we're honest? And I think he's doing an excellent job. And dare I say, as a Tottenham fan, long may it continue if it means he gets the job permanently.
Because you're going to keep Pochettino, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, excellent. All right, well, look, I'm interested to know your take on this rejuvenated United and if a lot of their players have cheated previous managers.
Wow, that's a bit of a bold statement. I don't think cheated is necessarily the word, but certainly during the end of Mourinho's tenure, they just didn't want to play for him, did they? I mean, you could argue that Mourinho was also playing square pegs in round holes, which didn't help. But, you know, you look at someone like Rashford and it's just, he wants to play, Pogba wants to play. So, you know, good players are doing what they're, you know, meant to be doing in the first place. And that's no accident. That's the fact that you've got a good manager, he's instilled belief in him, and these players are now motivated. So it's probably sort of somewhere between the two. I don't think it's necessarily the players have just, you know, fought let's lose matches to get his man out. I don't think it's that sort of cut and dry. But there's certainly some underlying sort of issue of, you know, we don't really want him here, but we need to still try and do a job. But I don't think Mourinho allowed the players in with the system that was set up for them to be in, allowed them to be that best. So I think, you know, a change was needed. I think it was a bit of a shock. You know, no one really expecting Mourinho to go in December. And we talk about the three-year cycle and how it's sort of coming to the end of that period. But everyone sort of had the inclination it was going to be a departure, you know, shaking hands at the end of the season. But to make that sort of swift exit in December, you know, it was bold, but it's certainly paid off.
Absolutely. And Rod, Ole made six changes to the team that beat Leicester last week. Bill and Ben were given a run out and they kept Mitrovic at bay. In all fairness, with the form United are in, they shouldn't have been troubled by Fulham, should they?
No, they shouldn't. But, you know, Mitrovic is a handful and he can give anyone, you know, anyone an hard time. So he's still got to defend well, and which they did at some points. You know, it's kind of getting glossed over that, like, how many changes that he's made, and it's just like, it's he's doing a fantastic job, and just long may it continue.
Is David De Gea remarkably brave or just stupid to try square up to Mitrovic?
Stupid.
Probably a bit of both. He's a keeper. He should be able to look after himself, and. I don't think keeper should be backing down from anyone. I wouldn't like to. I wouldn't like to have a run with him. Anyway.
I've heard all about Serbian gangsters. Not my cup of tea. Thank you very much.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, Jan, Gary Neville likened Martial's goal to the one Ronaldo scored at that very same end back in 2007. Question is, what on earth was Tim Ream doing? Surely he should have taken him out.
That's one of the worst kind of piece of defending I've seen in my life. I was pathetic, wasn't it? You know, for a team that's struggling at the foot of the table, you're playing one of the biggest clubs and you're putting in performances or challenges like that, then there's only one way for Fulham, isn't it? They're going down. But that's been Fulham's problem all season. They can't defend. Yeah, they score goals. I mean, not a lot of them, but, you know, with Mitrovic, you know, they've got goals in them. But I think they've kept, two clean sheets or something like that all season? You know, so, you know, they haven't got a hope for me. They lack desire, they lack fight. You know, the fans are turning on the manager already. Fulham are gone for me.
Well, Dan, it feels like Groundhog Day because every week when we talk about Fulham, it's always the same old story, really. Defensively, they're utter shambles and they rely too much on Mitrovic. And don't get me started on Jean-Michel Seri because I don't understand what the fuss is about with this guy. But that's it for Fulham, isn't it? I mean, they've conceded 58 goals already this season.
Yeah, they're done. I mean, they're too far cast adrift now. There's, six teams above them that are getting results when it matters, you know, sort of... picking up sort of draws and wins when necessary. Fulham aren't getting that. And I think really the statement that they're relying on their attack is a bit of a misnomer as well, because their attack's not really doing all that great at the other end. I think at the start of the season, everyone was thinking, okay, they may be leaking goals, but at least their attack will go and score one more. They'll be fine. But they're failing at both ends now. So for that reason, they're done.
Who could they have brought in to save them though?
What, managerial or players?
Let's say managerial.
Well, I don't think Ranieri was the worst shout. I mean, really, do they go down the usual firefighter route of Moyes, Allardyce, Pardew? I think really out of options that they could have gone for, it's not the worst pick. I think in terms of actual personnel, after spending £100 million in the summer, I know the Fulham owner's got deep pockets, but I think he's looked at it and thought, well, I'm not prepared to spend another £100 million if we're going to go down. So you need to start working with what you've got, because they probably braced themselves for the impact of relegation now. So why chuck more money at it when you've sort of almost given up the ghost?
Yeah, you're right. And as you said, mate, you could have got in your Sam Allardyce, your David Moyes, all these other guys. But if the players aren't good enough, it's not going to work. I mean, I remember Harry Redknapp when he brought in Paul Kitson and John Hartson to keep them up, and they hit the ground running, didn't they? But when you look at that Fulham squad from front to back or back to front, however you want to see it, aside from, I say, Mitrovic, there isn't anyone else really there that can really carry them forward or even drag them out of the mire.
Oh, no, exactly. I mean, Mitrovic has got something like, 40% of Fulham's goals this season, so he can't do it alone. And I think even his sort of contribution hasn't been as good as many expected. I think he'd still be a handful or useful for a Premier League team next season if Fulham do go down. But like I say, I think just everyone across the board hasn't really sort of got up to that Premier League level. I mean, they did great getting through the Championship table last season to get into this position to get promoted. But I think, you know, unfortunately in the Premier League, there has to be three bad teams each season, and they are definitely one of them.
Absolutely.
Everton should have signed Mitrovic.
Yeah, it's not a bad shout. I mean, I think it's certainly better than Cenk Tosun, whatever his name is. But I think, yeah, I mean, I think Mitrovic is a good player and he's still quite young, don't forget, in terms of sort of, you know, how a striker is and when they hit their peak. So there's certainly something there, but I just don't think Fulham are necessarily getting the best out of him. And like I say, I think it's too much of a burden for one man alone.
No, spot on there, mate. Spot on. Right, the fight to avoid 18th took another twist at the weekend as Burnley and Cardiff were victorious in their 6-pointers. Cardiff put Emiliano Sala's death behind them for 90 minutes to beat Southampton at St Mary's, while Burnley's win away to Brighton pushed the Saints into the bottom three and put them level on point with Chris Hughton's men. Rod, just when Southampton thought they'd earned a point in stoppage time, up pops Kenneth Zahor to bag Cardiff's winner. This is another big result for Warnock's men, and a last gasp goal will do wonders for their confidence, won't it?
Yes, it will, but you know, I think with the team spirit they've got, that just shows the team spirit they've got. But yeah, it'll do wonders for the confidence, and you know, it's just the dagger in the heart for Southampton, and you know, basically a 6-pointer down there, and it's desperate 3 points, and a brilliant away win, and I just keep on. Can't praise Neil Warnock enough how well a job he's doing, you know, especially under the difficult circumstances and the death of Salah and, you know, what that entails. So, yeah, it's a great result and a good weekend for Cardiff City.
Mm. And Jan, tragic circumstances can make or break a team, really. Cardiff haven't let the death of Salah affect their performance on the pitch. Credit to Warnock and his players for being so focused and professional.
Absolutely, mate. I mean, for me, if Cardiff stay up this season, for me, Warnock's the manager of the year.
Really?
Personally.
Wow.
Sorry?
You stand by that, yeah?
Yeah, I do, mate, because of, you know, we talk about kind of budgets and what, but, you know, look at most clubs in the Premiership. They've all got abundance of money that can improve their squad. You know, Warnock's bringing in, you know, Harry Arter from Bournemouth, like on loan, to try and, you know, keep his team up. You know, I know they forked out the money on Salah and, you know, obviously with the circumstances that happened, you know, they've been unlucky there. But like you said, sometimes, you know, with tragedies or something negative at the club, it can bring the club together. It can bring the players together. And it looks like everyone's, you know, behind the manager, behind the fans, and everyone seems united there at Cardiff. And because of that fighting spirit and the togetherness, they do have a chance of staying up just on the fact that they will work hard for each other. Where, like, for example, if you look at Fulham, nobody works hard there. So, you know, Cardiff have got a chance this season. And, you know, like Rod said, you've got to give Warnock incredible credit for what he's done there.
But we saw that with Leicester, though, when their owner died in that helicopter crash. The first few weeks, they were, you know, really fighting the cause. But now it's almost as if they're just like, OK, I know they've been unlucky and whatnot, but I don't know, man. It just seems that sometimes tragedy can bring the best and worst out of teams.
Yeah, absolutely, mate. I mean, for me, though, Puel would have been sacked if circumstances, you know, were different at Leicester. You know, as horrible as this may sound, but the fact that what happened there kept Puel in the job a little bit longer because they weren't going to sack him after what happened. But, you know, the Leicester fans have never taken to Puel, and the fact that he's falling out with Vardy as well, you know, and the results lately have not been there. Leicester are one of them funny teams where they can go and beat, you know, United and then go and lose to Cardiff 4-0. I mean, they are that kind of a team. So I think Puel, you know, will be gone in the summer, if not by the end of the season.
Fair enough. Well, Dan, Southampton somehow managed to turn 4 points into one in the space of two games. They didn't hold on for a win at Burnley last week and capitulated against Cardiff. Some might say they've been unlucky, but I call it absent-minded. It's almost as if their players switch off in the 90th minute.
Yeah, it's just bad game management, really, isn't it? I mean, I guess, is it a 6-pointer against Cardiff? Probably. And I think, really, after getting back into the game in such dramatic circumstances, you just think, right, you know, shut it all down. We've got the point we've been trying to get this last sort of, 10, 15 minutes, whatever. You know, they've got their objective in that game and then they've just thrown it away, really. So they can only look at themselves and think, well, you know, we've only got ourselves to blame here. Whether that comes from the manager and he's been maybe tactically naive, I don't know. Not sort of obviously not watching the whole 90 minutes. But, yeah, I think the players have got to come in for some criticism there, and it's drop points of that nature, which might be really costly come the end of the season.
The thing is, Hassan Hall's done a pretty decent job, to be fair. He's got them playing football the way the fans want. Okay, the results haven't been great recently, but they've got some good results. They beat Arsenal. I think they've got I think they got City to come. Have they got City to play? Or they lost. They just about lost to City, didn't they?
They lost to City at St Mary's, didn't they?
But that was a, you know, they put in a good performance with that one, to be fair. But the thing is, you mentioned the whole mismanagement. Do you think this is another foreign manager that's come to the Premier League that doesn't quite understand how unforgiving this league is? Perhaps he's not one of these managers that knows how to shut up shop when they have to.
Yeah, that could be a fair criticism. I mean, like you say, Southampton's results have been solid, if not spectacular, of late. I think they hadn't lost in five before Saturday, so it was something of an upset, really, because he would have probably made Southampton the favourites going into that game. So I think, just like I say, on that day, just bad game management. After getting a goal so late, you should think, right, you know, that's it. You know, don't do anything silly now and undo what we've just done. And unfortunately for them, they did that. So I think they should learn from that. If they don't, then they'll only make things worse for themselves. But I think they'll just have to put that one to bed and move on.
Well, to be fair, the guy, he got Shane Long scoring, so you can't be doing too bad.
No, that is true. Yeah, exactly. I didn't think that was ever going to happen in the Premier League again. So,
well, there you go. There you go. Right. In other news, Real Madrid warmed up for their Champions League clash against Ajax with a 3-1 win in the Madrid derby to overtake their crosstown rivals in the table. Jan, Gareth Bale scored Real's third, his 100th goal for the club. They've now won their last 6 out of 7 games and are 5 or 8 points. I think they're 8 points behind Barca now. Is it too late, or can they bring themselves back into La Liga? Is there going to be a twist to the La Liga title charge?
It's only 6 points though. Barcelona didn't win tonight.
Oh, they drew?
Yeah, they drew with
Portugal. Oh, wow, okay.
So, yeah, you got to give Solari credit. You know, his younger players are starting to perform now. I mean, Vinicius Junior is starting to have a run at the running the team, and he's performed really, really well. The Real Madrid fans have seemed to take into him, which has given him extra confidence. Benzema is scoring goals now, you know, something that he hasn't probably done for the last couple of years. And like you said, you know, 6 out of 7 wins, and wins bring confidence. And, you know, Barcelona are not the Barcelona that we're associated over the last years. Yeah, they're still getting results, but Barcelona are beatable. And, you know, looking at Barcelona's results this year, I mean, they drew with Valencia, they've drawn again tonight with Bilbao. So they're not that team anymore that used to go and blow kind of teams away. So, you know, it's only 6 points and, you know, still a Clasico to come up. So all to play for still.
That's right. Now, moving over to Holland, then Ajax undid all their hard work from last week's 6-0 demolition of VVV Venlo, losing 1-0 at Heracles. Incidentally, the Heracles goal was their first in Eredivisie since the 22nd of December. Dan, while Ajax are only 5 points behind PSV at the top of the table, something doesn't seem right at the club. Jan and I spoke about the impact De Jong's pending departure is having on the club a couple of weeks ago. What do you put this indifferent run of form down to?
Well, it's a funny one, really, isn't it? Because you take into account also they got thumped by Feyenoord 6-2, but then they've handed out a thrashing to Venlo. So it's been topsy-turvy over the past couple of weeks or so. A gap at the top is only really due to the fact that PSV have been quite relentless. So, you know, PSV only lost once this season. Ajax have now lost 3. So it's those 2 defeats in this recent spell which have been ultimately the difference. And I think that would probably mean that PSV go and win the league, because after losing once after, what, you know, halfway through the season, you don't really sort of see them dropping many more points. So that could be their downfall. But it's a funny one in terms of actual form. Whether De Jong's departure is really having an effect. I mean, you'd think he's professional enough and the team can sort of, you know, move on from this. And I don't think it's really going to be something which stops Ajax in their tracks. I think it's just been, like I say, a freak result against Feyenoord, but it's almost similar to Man City-Chelsea, a team of those sort of 2 statues in a domestic league shouldn't really be dishing out thumping to one another. But in terms of today, it's just one of those defeats, really, isn't it? Just an upset. I mean, Heracles is, what, 8th in the Dutch league? So although there's a wide difference in quality between the 2 teams, it's not the biggest shock. So I think it's just a blip. You know, all teams do go through in a season. Like I say, Ajax have lost 3 all season, 2 in the last sort of couple of weeks. So I think it's just their blip.
Here's an interesting stat about De Jong. It was by @OptaJohan. He said De Jong lost possession 20 times versus Heracles, more than that he did in any of his previous 68 matches for Ajax in all competitions.
Wow, that is a stat. I didn't know that. I don't know. Maybe his head's not in the game then. You can't really legislate for that, can you? I think the manager will be having a word for him after that performance, because if it's that bad and you compare it to six other games, then yeah, a day to forget, it seems.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Well, Rod, Ajax fielded their oldest side since 2012. It's an average age of 26. They may not be a European giant like they were back in the day, but the youth system is still going strong.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, this style, like I say, they're not a European super giant. They're not blessed with the money that of the Manchester United, the Real Madrid, the Bayern Munich. But, you know, historically, they've brought through fantastic young players, and they'll continue to do that if you know, because that's in their DNA, and that's what they do. And I'm sure they'll continue to do that. And like Dan says, I'm sure, you know, every team has a blip, and I'm sure they'll get back to winning ways and get back to that consistency, and then might be a little bit of a title race to the end of the season.
Well, before the winter break, I really fancied Ajax's chances against Real Madrid in the Champions League, but now not so much, because Real Madrid are in a rich vein of form and Ajax are slipping. What do you guys reckon? Do you think Ajax have got the opportunity to turn it around and beat them, or is it going to be Real Madrid all the way again?
I think Madrid will beat Ajax over two legs, though.
Dan?
I think Real Madrid will have that in the bag quite easily. I think, you know, Ajax, like I say, they can handle themselves in Europe, but I think this will be a test, which is too great for the Dutch side.
Rod?
Yeah, I think it won't be as easy as people think. I think it'll be tight, but I think Real Madrid will nick it, yeah.
Great stuff. Well, Jan, Lautaro Martinez came off the bench to score Inter's win at Parma, but it was the commanding performance of Raja Nainggolan that made the headlines. There's a 5-point gap between Inter and 5th place Lazio. Spalletti's job is safe for now, isn't it?
Is it? I think they've massively underachieved Inter Milan. I feel with the players he's got there, and you know the ability the players have as well. I think Inter Milan have been pretty poor this season. As for Nainggolan, listen, Nainggolan for me is a really good player. He's very commanding in the middle of the park. He can do a defensive job. He can play. He can score goals. The problem always been with Nainggolan is his attitude. You know. Off the pitch, he's not really, you know, the best of role models for anybody. And, you know, he's fallen out with previous managers everywhere he's gone. Everywhere he's been. So, well, listen, if he gets his head right on the pitch, he's a good player. So it can only benefit Inter Milan for the rest of the season.
Great stuff. Right, we didn't do it last week, but it's back.
And now it's time for Eurotrash.
Yep. Eurotrash is back. This is where I pick the best of the worst stories from Europe and around the world, and my panel of co-hosts will have to decide which of those stories is the best of the worst. You guys ready?
Yeah.
I think that's a yes. Right, let's start off with the first one, and it comes from Germany, where Dortmund's iffy form continued against Hoffenheim. Now, the game looked over as a contest when Guerrero put Dortmund 3-0 up with 24 minutes left on the clock. However, three Hoffenheim goals in 12 minutes salvaged the point for Julian Nagelsmann's men. Nagelsmann's men, can you believe that? Nagelsmann's men. Wow, that's a tongue twister in itself. Right, story number two involves another hiding. Benfica put 10, yes, T-E-N, past Nacional. Yeah, 10, enough said. Now, we cross over to Italy for story number three, as Italian minister Matteo Salvini branded Gonzalo Higuain a mercenary. Now, Salvini told Italian radio, "I'm glad Higuain is gone. I hope we'll never see him again in Milan because he really behaved in an unworthy manner." Salvini so happens to be Italy's deputy prime minister. Now, I don't mean to tar Italian politicians with the same brush, but I seem to remember a certain former Italian PM who also owned Milan behaving in a little unworthy way. Banger parties, say another. Staying in Italy, and Cagliari's players were trapped inside their training ground just hours before they were scheduled to travel to the airport for the game against Milan. The reason for this? Local farmers protesting about milk prices. Over 100 local farmers blocked the exits of the Assemileno training ground in an attempt to get the game cancelled as part of a wider protest. Now, our final story is hot off the press and comes from Argentina, where Rosario Central's players found, and I quote, toxic white powder in the away dressing room at Newell's Old Boys Stadium ahead of the Clásico Rosarino. Now, two Rosario members of staff required medical attention after inhaling this dust. Turns out, This mystery powder was a ceniza de muertos, which also means ashes of the dead. So, in a nutshell, some mischief maker got a few kilos of dead people's ashes and scattered it all over the seats and walls of the dressing room. So there you go. Gentlemen, the best of the worst. Jan?
Which one's the worst one? Probably... What was the one before the Argentina one, mate?
Well, with the farmers.
10-0.
Yeah, no, the farmer one's the worst one for me.
For Cagliari, yeah?
Yeah, yeah, that's the worst one.
Okay. Rod, you going for the 10-0?
Yeah, 10-0. For any team in the same league to get beat up, team 10-0 is embarrassing.
Even if it's the Portuguese league?
What, pardon?
Even if it's the Portuguese league?
It's any league. If you're playing a team in your league and you get beat 10-0, you've got serious issues, or you need to have a look at yourself, because yeah, that shouldn't happen.
Rod, quick question, mate.
Go on.
What odds would you have got on that?
10-0. I've not got it in front of me. You know, I'm a 9-to-5 guy.
Well, if it helps, Rod, about 9 years ago, PSV beat final 10-0.
Yeah, it's embarrassing. It shouldn't happen. You know, if I ever got beat in a team that was 10-0, I would have just retired.
Fair enough. Dan, what's your best of the worst, mate?
When you mentioned Benfica and 10, I thought you were going to reference the women's team, because I know they've been handed out thrashings all season, haven't they? But I'll go for the Milk one, because I think that's a bit of a bizarre story. So yeah, Milk for me.
Okay, fair enough. Likes the white stuff. There you go. Well, I was going to go with the dead people dust, really, because that's just weird. That's really weird. But
it's South American, so they do that kind of stuff over there, don't they?
Yeah, that's normal.
Yeah. Well,
have you seen the footage of the fans outside dancing? They're on some different white stuff. There you go. Right, our final segment, and that is our Guess Who game. Now, Jan won it last week. He got his first win in 26, which got to congratulate him again for that. So it's his turn to select the player. Now, Dan, I don't think you've played our version of Guess Who before, have you?
No, I haven't.
No? Okay, well, the rules are quite simple. Jan has thought of a current Premier League player, and you need to guess who he is. Now, what he's going to do is going to give us clues, and they come in the form of his former teammates. So it's basically players that he's played alongside, or he currently plays alongside them, whether it be club level or international level. So yeah, that's it. So we're going to do three rounds of three clues. So he gives three clues, we got a guess. If no one gets it, then we can continue another round with you again, and then there's a final third round. So yeah.
Okay, sounds good.
Okay.
All right, come on, Jan, fire away.
You're not ready, yeah?
Let's do it. Current Premier League player. Let's go.
Yeah, first round of clues. Gary Roberts.
Gary Roberts. Wow.
Michael Chopra.
Yeah.
And Danny Graham.
Okay. So, guess who, bingo? It could be anyone.
I'm going to start. I'll give you, like, I don't know, a minute.
Okay.
Gary Roberts. I don't even know who that is.
Ex-Portsmouth, Huddersfield. Left-footed winger.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Okay, yeah. And what was the others?
Michael Chopra or Danny Graham?
Michael Chopra. Well, he's played for a few teams, hasn't he? Blimey, he was at Sunderland. He was at
Cardiff.
Yeah, wasn't he at Newcastle as well? He started up in Newcastle.
Yeah, Newcastle. Yeah. Started there.
Jordy, isn't he?
Jesus. He's in India, isn't he, at the moment? Or?
Yeah, he's in there. He's half in there, isn't he?
Yeah. He played for Kerala Blasters or something like that.
That's right. Alright, Stel, I'm going to start with you.
Oh, for crying out loud, Jan.
Oh, now you know how I feel every week.
Current Premier League player. Oh, Jesus.
No, it's not him.
No, it isn't. I didn't think it would be, to be honest. I actually can't think of anyone, mate. Crying out loud. Johnny Evans.
Nope.
Okay.
Dan?
I can't think of anyone. I genuinely, like, mind's blank here. I can't think of a connection between Chopra and Graham. So I'm not even going to bother with answering this one because I don't want to embarrass myself.
Okay. Rob?
No, I don't. Jordan Pickford.
No, it's not. Okay.
Okay, next round.
Next round. Luke Steele, Nathan Dyer, and Chris Smalling.
Oh, jeez. Oh, crikey. Okay.
Who's the first one?
Luke Steele.
Who's he? Keeper.
Ex-United keeper, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh.
Nathan Dyer.
I don't like this. I don't like being on the receiving end of this, Jan. Luke Steele.
I said to you, I don't know if I've done it properly.
Now, when did Luke Steele was at United? That's the only club I can, off the top of my head. Wasn't Luke Steele at Barnsley as well?
Wasn't he at Sunderland? He's the goalkeeper in the documentary, isn't he?
Ah, okay.
So, John O'Shea, for example, that's the link, but I don't know if it'd be Dyer or Smalling. Well, actually, no.
Oh, he's not Premier League, is he?
No, he's not. Good shout. God, these are impossibly hard.
Thanks, Dan.
It's not like a question of sport, is it?
Listen, I go to bed with a headache with this game every single week. So, it's you lot's turn tonight.
Crikey, so who else? He played with Chopra, Danny Graham. Danny Graham's played for practically every bloody team.
Correct.
Nathan, Chris Smalling has only played for Fulham and Man United and Maidstone, hasn't he?
I'll give you a clue, he's played for England as well.
Oh, for the love of...
As in Chris Smalling's played for England.
Oh, that was your hint, Chris Smalling has played for England.
Well, I'm just trying to make it easier for you, look, because I know how difficult.
Shut up.
Okay. You don't want to guess, or shall I go to the next round?
Let us guess. Come on now, man. You know, you got to give us a bit of a chance. You know, crikey! Like, how many times do I give you guys like extra minutes?
All right, I'll give you another.
Never.
Yeah, thank you.
Don't. I'm not having that.
All right, I'll give you like 1 minute.
1 minute. This is a difficult one. Dan's gone quiet. Are you still there?
Yeah, I'm just trying to piece it all together. It's like trying to be Rain Man, isn't it? Like, I don't really know the career of Luke Steele and Nathan Dyer's, like,
do you know what? When I give you like the third clues, it might give it away.
Right, let's hope it does, because I'm still none the wiser.
I'm going to go for Bill Bardsley.
No, it's not.
Not a bad guess. I don't like the sound of this. It gives a false sense of security.
I'm just saying it wasn't a bad guess. That's all.
Christ. Do you want to guess, Dan?
No, I'll wait for the first set of clues. I'm still trying to work out who the hell Gary Roberts is.
I've got another guess. It might count.
All right, Stel, do you want to guess?
I'm going to pass, mate.
Okay. Third set of clues. Harry Kane. Jamie Vardy. Eden Hazard.
Oh, Stanley Drinkwater.
He's got it.
Well done.
Oh, fucking hell.
Well done. Very good. Very good. Go on, Jan. Who did Drinkwater play with, and which clubs?
Gareth Roberts at Huddersfield on loan, 2009-2010.
You've done your own work. Yes,
yeah, I did actually.
Yeah.
He played with Michael Chopra at Cardiff. He played with Danny Graham at Watford. He played with Luke Steele at Barnsley. Nathan Dyer at Leicester. He played with Smalling at England. He's had 3 caps. And obviously he played with Kane at England, Jamie Vardy at Leicester, and now Hazard at Chelsea.
Oh, where did he play with Nathan Dyer?
Leicester.
Wow, very good. Well done, Dan. Well done, mate. Congratulations.
Thank you very much. Got there in the end. It all just clicks eventually, but the first two clues would have been none the wiser.
Well, I did say the third set of clues would have given it away.
That's superb. Well, look, next time you're on the show, you're going to have to do one.
Right, okay. Well, I'll keep that in mind.
Superb. Well, gents, that's it for our show this week. But yeah, Dan, thanks for coming on, man. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, guys. Much appreciated. Hope to be on sometime soon.
Absolutely, mate. And before we let you go, do you want to tell our listeners your Twitter handle and how they can get in contact with you and listen to your shows?
Yeah, sure. My Twitter handle is @DanTracy1983. The shows are usually found on the Twitter wall, so if you just want to go there. But if you listen to Real Football Cast, you can go to realfootballcast.com, and all the usual links to all the standard platforms can be found on that website.
Superb. Yan?
Yannick is Jake.
Great stuff. Holly Rod.
James Giggs, sorry.
Ah, superb, excellent. And is Kev going to fix your car by any chance?
Kev?
Yeah, Kev. Kevin Webster.
Tyrone, sort mine out.
Brilliant, great stuff. Well, guys, if you're still listening, you can follow us on Twitter at Shoot Defence. We have a Facebook group page. We're on Audio Boom, we're on Spotify, we're on FNX, so visit fnx.network, you can listen to all of our shows there. So until next time, adios.